so hot.
Last year, when the NFL for the first time did three Christmas Day games, it blew away the NBA ratings. Next year, Christmas lands on a Wednesday. A comment was made by Mike North, who's now basically in charge of the process, that they'll play Christmas Day games except when it lands on Tuesday or Wednesday. Are you sure they won't play Christmas Day games on Tuesday and Wednesday? Are you sure about that?
You're the one who says, I don't care. You do care. You want football. You say you're going through withdrawal. You want it mainlined into your arm. Admit it.
Woo. So hot.
Peter got mad at me that morning because I kept saying, Peter, they're going to play on Christmas Day. I'm not saying I want it. This idea, whether it was Mike North or Hans Schroeder or anybody from the league office, when they say we're not going to play on Christmas Day, when it lands on a Tuesday or Wednesday, my immediate reaction was, to quote you, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. They are going to play on Christmas Day. And I said, when the owners get together in March and they talk about how many people are watching football on Christmas and how many aren't watching basketball, there is no way in hell they're coming out of that meeting and saying, yep, we're not going to play Christmas games this year. Yeah. That was the least surprising development. Again, that's another one that I wish I would have remembered it to say, get ready, folks. Guess what's happening this week? They're going to tell us they're playing football games on Christmas. I guess I didn't need to do it because I already said it. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The great and powerful Oz has spoken. They're following the money. They're not going to give up. 28.7 million average viewers on a three-game sweep of the NBA this past Christmas. I'm just surprised they're not playing three games. They announced yesterday they're going to play two games Christmas Day 2024. Why not go ahead and do three? Why not take over the whole day? Don't even give the NBA an opening to take part of the day. Get it done and play the games. I figure next time around it'll be a Tuesday or a Wednesday in the future, depending upon leap year and whatnot. They skipped over Tuesday this year with leap year, but when it happens again, I fully expect there'll be three games. They're not going to do two. They'll find a way to make it work, and they'll play three games.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're going to do that on – what if next year – so the year after this, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday, right? I mean, Christmas is on a Thursday.
Thanksgiving's always on a Thursday.
I mean, you know what I meant to say. Christmas is on a Thursday. I mean, are we not going to play Christmas on a Thursday?
No. I mean, they'll do the three games. They'll do the games on a Thursday. They said in the past – they said they won't do it when it's on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right.
That's
right,
what they said.
Right.
I threw the challenge flag from
bull
the get-go.
Bull crap. I mean, we've called this, right? I mean, to me, it's like, duh, of course, right? I mean, yeah, you took over Sundays. You took over Thanksgiving. Why not take over the other special day during that time of the year? Let alone, come on, it's the heart of football season still. I feel like America, we're not ready to turn the page there at that point and go, okay, it's basketball time. We're not. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the season. Who's going to get in the playoffs? That's all you really care about here in America right now, at least the majority of sports fans. And, I mean, Mike, not only were you all over this and I piggybacked with you, but another thought we had where I think this cracks the door open to start it. Right, is that we're going to see games in the regular season on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. That's going to happen. It's like I just feel like this is a precursor to that. Oh, okay, we found how we want to kind of finagle the schedule to make it work. Oh, okay, and you know now we can make it work in week 9 too. Why can't we do it then? I'm hoping that's the start of it, but I'm glad to see football on Christmas Day, and I'm, of course, not surprised like you.
Keep this in mind. The same people who told us there won't be football on Wednesdays on Christmas are now saying there won't be football on other Wednesdays. Here's Roger Goodell from yesterday explaining that the only Wednesday we'll see football is when Wednesday is Christmas. Here he is.
We've done this. In fact, in COVID, it was actually a learning opportunity. I think it was the first time we played on a Wednesday. It will not be a regular thing. It'll be when Christmas falls on a Wednesday. But the time period between games has been done before. We have not seen any elevation of injuries. You all and we have had a major focus on Thursday night when we first put it in, and we've still not seen any kind of elevation of injuries. So I think we have this down.
See, that is the bullcrap statistic that they cooked up 10 years ago. Here's how they justify short week football. The injury rate in the game between Sunday to Sunday and Sunday to Thursday. The injury rate is the same. That completely overlooks whether or not players have had sufficient recovery time, whether it's good for the long-term health of the players to be playing on artificial turf 4 days apart with only 3 days off in between, whether or not there are key players that would be available to play if we were on a Sunday to Sunday schedule, not Sunday to Thursday or Saturday to Wednesday. That's what they're going to do. The four teams that will play on Wednesday, Christmas Day, will play not the same games. They'll reshuffle and play the Saturday before Christmas. So Saturday to Wednesday is the same as Sunday to Thursday. This is easy for them to justify. And once you accept and once you use as your frontline defense, there's been no increase in injuries. The injury rate's the same. And that overlooks so many things. And you know it. We've talked about this over the years. That is a baloney, facetious, self-serving argument that is fully in support of the one thing that the league cares about. And when I say the league, I mean the league office, chasing as many dollars as possible. This helps them chase more dollars, and they use that argument to shout down people like me who'd say, what about the guy who maybe is healthy enough to play, but not, you know, not really, or really shouldn't be playing, or whatever the case may be. What about the wear and tear on the human body and playing game on Sunday? They don't care about that. All they care about is the injury, because that's the statistic that supports their chase for more dollars.
Yeah, I mean, you, well said. I totally agreed. You're right. I don't think it's necessarily about that. It's you're not getting a lot of players maybe at their best. You're not getting the coaching at their best, like we've talked about. And to me, yeah, it's more about the cumulative effect, right? That would be the thing to look for. Maybe that's what we need to look up to see or check out, right, when we have this conversation next time. What is those teams that play on those two games 4 days apart, how about the next week? How many people are missing that game, whatever? But it takes a toll on you. We know that. I don't care what the numbers say or anything like that. All players will tell you that. To play two games in 4 days is tough. And what we all look at as the most physical team sport in the world, yeah, it's not killing guys. I get it. But for them to frame it and be like, oh, it's perfectly fine, it's just a normal week, you know, I don't think that's fair either to what you're saying.
And look, this is the thing about statistics. If you have smart people, if you have creative people, and if you have people who are willing to do whatever needs to be done and say whatever needs to be said to support the broader goals of the organization, you can find a statistic that will support you. They've tried to create a debate based upon statistics over grass versus artificial turf, when anecdotally, players want to play on grass. It's not about injury rate. It's about how my body feels the next morning when it's time to get out of bed. Am I injured? No. Do I feel like shit? Yes. But that doesn't factor into the statistics that they cite to create a phony debate, because they're too cheap to retrofit the stadiums with high quality grass, except when FIFA says the only way you're going to have World Cup games is if you do it. So, you know, I made this point yesterday in the aftermath of the hip drop tackle. The NFL is all in for player safety as long as it doesn't cost anything or it doesn't infringe on a revenue stream. If there's money to be made, forget about player safety. If it's going to cost too much money, forget about player safety. They'll never say it that way.
No.
But that's
back to our segment one. That's what the special teams coaches are, you know, like I've told you. That's basically what they're saying. Like, they don't really care about safety. It's just they've infringed on our area. But, hey, there's 10 other areas here where I could go, hey, this can be improved for player safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, they shun it. I think that's, you know, what frustrates everybody a little bit, Mike, to your point.
And what needs to be said to those special teams coordinators is, in that specific instance, they are concerned about one very specific aspect of safety, somebody having a broken neck and dying on the field in a high-speed collision and a kick return. That's the element of player safety they're concerned about. I assume and I hope for the player, but also for their own interests. I mean, let's be realistic about it. People say to me, well, why do you hate the NFL? I don't hate the NFL. I love the NFL. I was indoctrinated by John Facenda and NFL Films into thinking that professional football is something that deserves to be put on a pedestal. And as I got older and realized it's really a business and follow the money and be suspicious of those who are trying to accumulate as much money as possible to the detriment of those who are playing the game, that is where my function is. And it's not about hating the NFL. It's about holding the NFL accountable to get them to go against this quest by the commissioner. Frankly, I'm going to say it. He wants 20 $5 billion per year in revenue by 2027. Well, certain things get in the way of the effort to get to $25 billion per year by 2027, like spending money on this or passing on an opportunity to carve off these Christmas games. And I haven't heard this for a fact yet, but, you know, these aren't just going to be part of the package that Fox, CBS, NBC, and ABC are already paying for. They're going to take those two Sunday games and they're going to sell them to the highest bidder. I guarantee you they're going to do that.
Christmas,
they're not
right?
just going to say,
it a special
yeah, hell
package.
Yes.
Yeah, right, right.
We want $200 million for that game. I mean, look, what did we pay? $150 million? Was that the number? $110 million? $120 million?
I thought it was $110.
It's nine figures. Right. $110. $110 million for the wild card playoff game. Amazon this year, $120 million for the wild card playoff game. What do you think they're going to get for the Wednesday Christmas games? What do you think? They're at least going to get that much. They're going to go, and they're going to go back to the well. And I'm not saying there's not value in having those games. There's tremendous value in having those games. But I'm a capitalist. I got no problem with chasing the money. But there are points where the chase for the money maybe isn't the right thing to do. And maybe you're ignoring facts or twisting facts or warping reality to support your chase for the money. That's what this is all about. So they justify short week football. And Chris, like you said, there's going to be more. I was thinking the other day, because it all happened yesterday. Like, why are you slamming the door on other Wednesdays? Like, how about the night before Thanksgiving? How long until they decide we're going to drop a game there? Like, that's kind of a captive audience. People are home baking pies.
Agreed.
Right?
I would love
Everybody's
that.
Kind of chilled,
yes,
hanging out.
Right.
And so we'll find a way to play a game on Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah.
And 30 million people will watch it, and one of the networks will pay $100 million to televise it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. Listen, our heart's in the right place. We want the game to be better. We want it to grow. We want all of that. You know, but at the same time, yeah, we're gonna call the NFL out when we see BS. We want what's best for the players, and we don't want the game changed or ruined just for, like, what you're talking about, bottom line dollars or all of that. And I think that's where you and I, you know, tend to push back on the NFL. It has nothing to do with hating the NFL. It's the exact opposite
right.
of that, really.
Well, but we're conflicted on this, too, because, you know, I kind of like having a game on every – I mean, this is where Peter got mad at me, because I think he could see the twinkle in my eyes. I was talking about it because I said, oh, Peter, I'm not saying I want this. I'm just saying the NFL is going to do it, and that's true. But, you know, after 15 years of trying to watch 8, 9, 10 games at once in the NBC viewing room, you and I both are on the same page. The more of those games you can peel out and drop on – Wednesday night, Tuesday night, I would have no problem whatsoever with a full season of Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, lather, rinse, repeat.
Me neither.
I'd like it. You'd like it. A lot of people like it. Because those Monday and Thursday nights, now maybe it would get to the point where it'd be overload, but man, that's special during football season. Because for us, Sundays are so freaking hectic. To have that night where we're not working, well, we're working, but we're not on, we don't have to be on. We can watch the game and enjoy the game for what it is. And yeah, I'd love to be able to watch more games in prime time.
Yeah,
but I also want to do it in a way that works for the players.
Yeah, no, that's right. They got to find that. They got to find what's right, you know, tinker with the schedule, figure out how they can maximize rest for these guys and do it the right way. But I'm hoping this whole Christmas on a Wednesday thing kind of opens the door to this conversation full time, because I'm with you. I'd like to see it as well, right? And you would think, yeah, it'd be easy to, hey, it's Tuesday night football on YouTube. You know, it's Wednesday night football on Apple TV, whatever. They'd be able to sell extra special packages for those nights. I think it's inevitable. I really do. Just like 18-game schedule, all of that. I just feel like it's all going this way. The game is too big. The sport's too big. It's too big in our country. Everybody wants to watch it. And even if it was a Wednesday night, gosh, this team's 3-7 and the other team's 4-8, it's still the best thing on TV, and it's still the best reality thing, the reality TV there is out there. And, you know, we're going to have big viewing numbers.
And it doesn't matter what the team's records are because people want to tune in
yeah.
and bet on something. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing yeah. that's driving this. You need increased inventory for things people can bet on. That's the big part of this, too. And we'd be naive if we didn't mention that. It's not just watching for the pure love of the game. You've got people who want to watch so they can bet during the game, before the game, after the game, to chase their losses or celebrate their wins on anything and everything about professional football. All right, let's take a break. We're going to break down the impact of other rule changes that happened this week when this Wednesday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. No more.
You know, anything you say can and will be used against
I know.
You.
Right. Yeah, I know. I always start singing and being an idiot, and then I go, oh, man, that's going to get used against me. And as it did, that was just Monday that I was singing that stupid song. I don't know why I was singing it, but I was.
Well, and that was me from at some point in the past doing the bass line, I guess that would be. I don't know. All right.
Remember that was Chris Kattan, right? That was who that was, right?
Chris, or Chris Kattan, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. I should know. I used to hang out with him a little bit, right? So, like, I
oh, had, really?
I, a few times, right? My early NFL.
His name dropping goes. Yeah, his name dropping
I know.
Goes. I don't know whether that's.
I know. It's not a big deal. Right. It's not a big deal, right? But it's like in my early days of, like, late college. You know, early NFL life where, hey, I'd go out in New York City, right, go to some clubs, do that, knew some people in that world, and he was kind of in that world with me a little bit and knew some of the people. And, yeah, like I definitely have one of my most, like, you know, human, I'm embarrassed that I did that moments with Chris Kattan, right, where it's like one of the first times
I. Wait, are you sure this is something you should be talking about?
It is, it is.
Because
it goes right into this, right? I mean, I won't say all the other things that led to this moment, right? But either way, yeah, we were there, and, like, he was sitting there, and we were listening to music or whatever, and I was like, hey, Chris, look, and I started doing, like, the dance like he did, and I can just still remember him looking at me like, yeah, that's funny, right? Like, you know, one of those moments where you're like, wow, that was really dorky and not cool of me to do that right there.
Yeah, he's never seen that from
right.
anyone.
Right, exactly.
Never in his life.
Right.
Not every single day of his life.
Right.
They had a neat spoof on that in The Office, too, which is available exclusively on Peacock, all episodes. It was at some point when they merged the branches, Stanford and Scranton. There was like Michael Scott does his little meetings and presentations, and there was they did that, and it was Andy when the cassette player didn't work or the CD player whatever it was when it didn't work, Andy started going bump bump bump, and they did
right.
the thing. All right, let's move on.
Yep.
Scale of 1 to 10, how big of an impact will this rule change have? Trade deadline moving to the Tuesday after Week 9, not the Tuesday after Week 10, because they didn't want to come out and acknowledge that they're thinking about an 18th regular season game. Andrew Berry, the Browns GM, told us 4 weeks ago that they specifically proposed 2 extra weeks for the trade deadline because they're accounting for the 17th game and the 18th game that is coming. No, 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 don't say that out loud. Let's just move it from the Tuesday after Week 8 to the Tuesday after Week 9. Scale of 1 to 10, how big of an impact?
I think it's a pretty big impact. I'm going to give it like an 8. I am. I think it's one more week for teams that will add a lot more, not only intrigue, news to the media cycle, whatever, but one more week for a team to go, well, we're not a playoff team. Let's be sellers. And another team to go, hey, you know, we won that game last week. We're kind of sitting pretty here. Wait, we're actually pretty good. Maybe we need to push the chips all in the middle of the table. So I like it. And even if it's not a week, if there's not a week 18, I don't know why not just move it to week 10 anyways for the reasons we're talking about. But I do think this will add some fun, and I think it'll make some more drastic changes, right, to that trade deadline that maybe we haven't seen in the past. Like this past year, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. It was a year where we had a lot of teams where we felt like, ooh, they probably want to trade this guy, but they're not sure if they're still in the conversation for the playoffs and they dangled them out there but then ultimately didn't do it because they were afraid, oh, we might win the next two games and then be back in the hunt here, right? We had one of those years this year where you definitely wish it was pushed back a week.
An extra week of games gives teams an extra week of clarity as to whether or not it's over for them as a practical matter. And it's also another opportunity for a team to develop a need at a key position.
That's right,
because
too.
You get an injury.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Last year the Vikings had their Kirk Cousins injury week 8, and they got the deal done for Josh Dobbs 2 days later. If Kirk Cousins tears the Achilles week 9, you're SOL for a trade. And look, I'm into complete and total freedom in the markets. I think teams should be allowed to trade assets all the way up until the roster's lock for each team when their season ends. If you want to give up something now in exchange for something later, and if somebody else wants to give up something later in exchange for something now, and that's fine. Why should they be prevented from doing it by some arbitrary barrier? So I'd say push it all the way back to the end of the season. Go ahead and push it to week 10. When Rich McKay, the guy who we can ultimately blame for your initial presence in the NFL because he drafted you 21 years ago, when he was explaining it last week, and it was just kind of this word salad, nonsensical, all due respect, because it's like you're kind of chasing your tail with it. You don't want teams to give up. So, and we don't see evidence of that happening, but we don't want to move the trade deadline back because then they will. But they still do. There are teams that know it's over. There are teams that are trading current year assets in exchange for something next year that will help them get better. That's what the trades that happen, for the most part, right before the trade deadline are. A team that knows enough to make the educated decision that it's not in the cards for them this year. So let's move on from a guy that we're not going to have on our team next year anyway and get value for him going into next year as we try to turn this thing around. And why not allow teams to do that later in the year? When everybody else knows it's over for them, why not move those pieces to team? It's not like you can bring in a guy and it's going to transform a team anyway. That's why I think it's always a mistake. Unless you have a dire need, Chris, for the most part, you bring in a new guy, you're not going to get the most out of him over the balance of that year. You're changing the tire in a moving car.
Well, yeah, you are. There's certain positions that I think, you know, are not as drastic of a change or whatever, right? You know, a corner, a pass rusher, right? Where it's like it doesn't need – there's not a lot of X's and O's or scheme there that's like, oh, wow, it's going to take him a while, right? You know, I feel like week 10 would be the sweet spot. I feel like, you know, I'd have to think about it more, but if you went late in the season, I feel like there could be unintended consequences of people finagling things and players finagling things and doing things like that, that I don't know if it would work, right? But either way, I think we're on the right path here. I'm glad they knocked it back a week, and I think it's better for all of us and better for the league in general.
All right, let's do these last two very quickly. Replay can now be used to overturn ruling on the field that the quarterback was down or out of bounds before passing. Scale of 1 to 10, how significant?
I mean, 5 or 6, right? I don't know. I mean, didn't we see some plays this year where quarterback, we thought, threw it away, and then the referees huddled up and, like, Sky Judge came in and was like, oh, his knee was down before he threw the ball away? Right, I thought we saw something like that this year. I don't look at this as being a game-changing thing, right? But either way, I think it's necessary, and it's, you know, good for the game.
Wasn't that the controversy in the Bengals-Raiders
playoff
game a couple of years ago?
Well,
right,
it was the whistle, thing too.
The whistle, right. But maybe you swallow the whistle if you know that replay can come in and fix whether or not the guy was out of bounds before he threw the ball. So I say it's a 10 because anything that pushes toward full embrace of replay review to get it right, I'm for it because the league needs to acknowledge the fundamental difference between what the 7 middle-aged officials are seeing as they're trying to avoid getting trampled by the gladiators versus what somebody up in a booth that sees what we see at home can do to help get it right. So I'm in favor of it 100%. Last one, emergency quarterback can now come from the practice squad. Remember last year they came up with the emergency quarterback rule. They brought it back, but the third quarterback has to be on the active roster. Now you can bring him up from the practice squad and send him back down unlimited. There isn't that after 3 times you've got to make a roster move, you got to put him on the full roster or release him. No, you can go up and down with that practice squad player as your emergency quarterback? Scale of 1 to 10, how important?
Yeah, 6, I'll say. And I mean, again, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, break glass in case of emergency. You're not going to really see the third quarterback involved very much. But I think when it does get to that, a handful of times every year or whatever, yeah, it's good for the league, again, that the game doesn't fall apart. Right? Why were we making it so hard, not only on the teams, but even the viewers, for if that happens? So that, to me, is where I like the rule fixed. Again, I don't want to see a situation again where the 49ers can't even run their offense. That's not good, like we saw in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. So I like it from that standpoint, and the fact that teams don't have to worry, and now they can keep the extra guy on the roster to help with special teams or be the backup linebacker or whatever. I think it makes sense for everybody on a football team.
The way they dealt with it last year made no sense. Like, they felt compelled to do something, but what they did wasn't real because teams didn't want to carry a third guy on the 53-man roster
yeah, right.
in order to take advantage of the emergency quarterback option. Now you have your quarterback on the practice squad anyway. You call him up for game day. The only caveat is this, and the way the Bills proposed it, you've already got your two standard elevations from the practice squad every week. The Bills said, let's make the emergency quarterback the third elevation. The competition committee proposal, that's the one that was accepted. It's got to be one of your two standard elevations. So you're taking up a spot that otherwise would go to somebody else who could have come from your practice squad for game day if you're going to use that spot on an emergency quarterback. But look, one thing teams learned last year, and if you didn't learn it, you weren't paying attention. You better have more quarterbacks around, and you better be ready 2, 3, 4 deep, maybe, between your roster and your practice squad, because those guys can and will get injured, and we saw it last year. And if it happens again this year and somebody's not prepared for it, it's not going to be enough to say to the owner, well, last year we thought was a fluke and we guessed wrong. That's the kind of guess that gets you out the door for good. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we may not know who's playing the Eagles in the game in Brazil on the first Friday night of the season, but we do know how you can watch it, and there's a specific reason why we mention that. We'll discuss it next here on PFT Live. Fly, Eagles, fly to Brazil, and the Peacock will be flying to Sao Paulo as well. The Friday night game, the night after the Chiefs host somebody in Kansas City to start the season, will be streaming exclusively on Peacock, except in Philadelphia and the market where the other team comes from, because that's where they make it available over there. It'll still be streaming on Peacock, but you can watch it over the air there as well, like it always does for the Thursday night games that are on cable. I think they used to do it for the Monday night games. I think they still might do it in the local market when it's only on ESPN. Regardless, it's just a matter of getting Peacock. If you're not in Philadelphia or Cleveland, if that's who ends up being the opponent, or Green Bay, I think Green Bay or Cleveland are the two finalists. We saw somebody from the Browns recently say it's going to be Cleveland.
Right.
Regardless of who it is,
right.
Wherever you are, you can watch it on Peacock. Exclusive streaming. And I think this was always going to be a streaming game. It's just a question of where it was going to stream. And it's going to be on Peacock that first Friday night. And the reason they can do it, because usually in September, you can't have Friday and Saturday games. It's before the window closes on NFL games. Second weekend of September. The second Friday of September, that's when it's off limits. This will technically be the first Friday in September, so NFL can have a game. It will, and it's going to be on Peacock from Brazil on that Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I mean, what an opening weekend. Kansas City hosting, dropping a banner, right? Thursday night, NBC, Peacock, Friday night. Wow, Brazil, first game ever in South America. I mean, I'm still shocked that I'm even saying that, or those words are coming out of our mouth. The Philadelphia Eagles, one of the greatest organizations in our sports, star-studded players, you know.
Right, you hate the Eagles.
Well,
what are you saying? You hate the Eagles.
I don't disagree with that statement. I don't like them very much, right? But I have a lot of respect for them. I know that. You know, it's just in my DNA as a New Yorker and a Giant fan not to love the Eagles. But, man, how can you not respect what they do? A little controversy last year. What I want to ask you, Mike, is why not – what's the NFL – why not just announce it, right? Are they just trying to figure out the overall big schedule first before they figure out Cleveland or the Packers there? You know, I would think they'd want to get that out there.
That could be part of it because those are two teams that the Eagles are going to play anyway. So what's the rest of the Eagles schedule look like? But they like to announce things on their own terms. And again, the Browns player, I can't remember who it was, but he blurted it out a couple of weeks ago and we just kind of took it as a given. He seemed to know, but it may not be the Browns. And yeah, they've got different times. They like to announce things like during the draft, they'll announce something and they'll announce this, they'll announce that, they'll do this, they'll do that. They have their strategies for why and how things come up. It was Maurice Hurst, by the way.
No, that's right. You can't go wrong with either matchup. Eagles versus Browns, Eagles versus Packers is going to be good football no matter what, so I'd be excited.
By the way, real quickly, Amazon will have the exclusive streaming wild card game this year, not Peacock, so yell at them, not us. But Amazon's going to have that one streaming game pretty much indefinitely into the future as part of their Thursday Night Football package. 23 million watched last year on Peacock when it was Dolphins and the Chiefs. Let's take a break. When we return, Patriots owner Robert Kraft met with the media yesterday, and he shared some thoughts about the Dynasty Series. We'll talk about that next year on PFT Live.
There's been some negative reaction to the Dynasty docuseries. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I loved the first three episodes. I really liked. I felt bad that there was so much emphasis on the more controversial and, let's say, challenging situations over the last 20 years. I wish they had focused more on our Super Bowl wins, our 21-game win streak. You know, I felt bad. There were players who gave hours and hours of interviews, and they felt only the negativity. People like Devin McCourty and Rodney Harrison and Matthew.
Robert Kraft, echoing some of the concerns that we heard last week from Devin McCourty and Rodney Harrison about all the time they spent being interviewed for the Dynasty series. And for Rodney, it was just one line that showed up in the entire 10-episode show. Devin McCourty complained that it was only the negative stuff that they used from him. There was a lot of things they glossed over. People were surprised by Robert Kraft's criticism because there's this perception out there that Kraft bought and paid for the Dynasty. And the fact that Kraft Dynasty LLC is the final copyright screen in every episode makes people believe that he owned it, he made it, he produced it. They haven't said anything on the record about it. He wasn't asked about it yesterday. My understanding is it was something they had to do to protect the intellectual property, but they should just come out and put the statement out there if that's the truth, because a lot of people have just taken it as a given that Kraft's fingerprints are all over it, literally and figuratively, that he was the one ultimately behind it. People believe that. So that's why they were surprised by his reaction, because they're like, hey, didn't you make the thing? And maybe it's a sign that he really didn't make the thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know his name's on it, right? I haven't watched it yet. I've seen, read, you know, certain blurbs, seen a few clips here and there, right? This is normal process, owner of a football team to put their LLC at the end of it and all that for, like you're talking about, protective law rights or whatever, that goes on. I don't think by any, you know, stretch of the imagination do I sit here and think that Mr. Kraft or the Kraft family would love how the Dynasty looks and is portrayed. I don't think so. I don't look at it like that. I don't think Mr. Kraft wants a story told about the greatest thing maybe he's done in his life and buying the Patriots and hiring Bill Belichick and doing all that he did for the New England sports scene and everything and the greatest dynasty we've seen in the NFL history. I don't think he wants it documented as negative. And like, oh, no, this happened, Robert Kraft did this, Belichick, Brady. But he doesn't want it like that. Again, that's where it's weird. It's the most negative dynasty I've ever seen. And a lot of it is, yeah, the media, and they had some circumstances. But then again, I think a lot of it, too, is unlike other dynasties, there's a group of guys that are negative about what they were a part of. They're bitter still. And that's where, you know, you watch something on the 70s Steelers and watch them interviewed in the 80s, they're not mad and taking shots at the Steelers. You look at Niners of the 80s and getting interviewed in the 90s, they're not mad shitting all over Bill Walsh and the ownership of the 49ers, right? So that's where it's odd and it's a little weird, and I can understand, you know, some people being upset about it.
Not literally, figuratively.
Literally. Sorry, Edinburgh.
by the way, you had a clear recollection of Terry Bradshaw's comments about John Elway that we played last week as it relates to trying to avoid the team that holds the first pick in the draft.
Right. I know
you
it
need
wasn't,
to brush up on some
I
of the
know,
things
I
Terry
know.
Bradshaw
he wasn't
said
happy
about Chuck
at
Noll.
First. I hear. I understand that.
He's still not happy.
Yeah, he's still not happy. I know. I've seen the America's Game and, you know, players' life and all that. Yes, right. He still talks about things like that. But at the same time, when he talks about it overall and his personal struggles, he doesn't, like, get so negative on Chuck Noll and he did this and he treated this guy. And this guy's really the reason we were good, not the guy that actually ran the show and all of that. That's how this is coming off. I know none of them are perfect, right? Joe Montana, he didn't want to go cuddle with Bill Walsh, right? It's never going to be perfect in the NFL. Bill Walsh was pushing him. He was, you know, making Joe Montana work. He had Steve Young there as a hot poker. So, yeah, it wasn't all, you know, rose petals and tulips and all of that. But at the same time, the 49ers or any dynasty that I remember, it's not this negative about it. And that's where I think everybody, including players involved in it, are a little confused by that whole thing.
Belichick was also mentioned by Kraft yesterday. And, you know, there's a question as it relates to whether it paints him in a negative light. And Kraft retreated to saying, I feel so privileged that we had Bill here. We hope when he's finished that we're going to have a chance to honor him the way we will do with Tom Brady this year. They're going to put him in the team's Hall of Fame. And obviously Belichick's going to be in the Hall of Fame. They're going to, you know, they're going to set aside whatever differences they had and make nice. But you will get the distinct impression when you watch the dynasty that
that's what everybody says.
It makes Bill look bad. I mean, it does. Now,
right.
He did a good job on his own of making himself look bad with the way he conducted himself at his press conferences over the years. And when he was interviewed for this thing, it's all very stiff and wooden and his head's thrown back. And he just looks incredibly uncomfortable. And, you know, you get a lot of the monosyllabic answers. And, now, I look at it this way, too. The negativity makes it interesting. It makes them seem human. And
it
sells. It sells. It's better than saying, oh, look how great this was and look how great that was and look how great this is. You draw out the things that are going to be compelling, that are going to get people to keep watching it. You want the audience to be engaged. And negative stories are more engaging. They're more interesting, especially because we've all got this vision of the dynasty being a great thing.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean it wasn't great all the time? Tell me more. I'm leaning forward. Also, what is it about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady? Oh, wait, what happened here? What happened there? I mean, that's part of good storytelling.
I know. But we're as a society a little too obsessed with that negativity. And as McCourty or Harrison will tell you, there's so many good stories they tell that were great that went into winning a big game or a wrinkle in the big game. And I think people would find that interesting too, but that didn't get put out there. And, you know, that's just unfortunate. But you're right. I mean, that's kind of what sells right now as part of it. And people like to see.
It always has.
I know. It always has. But this feels like with this one, it's you know, and where we are right now, negativity is selling more now than ever. I don't remember. People are loving people crash and burning more now than ever. Right? It's, I can't wait to make a meme and kill this person now and totally ruin their life.
This is specifically a TV show that is aimed at getting maximum people to watch it and be entertained by it and not just shut it off after the first episode. Watch the whole thing. When you have, you know, it's just about drawing out
I get it. I know it. But, you know, like, hey, the Bulls thing with Michael Jordan, there was some negativity there. But the best parts were what makes him so great and how they won this game and do all of that. And that's where it's a little weird with this one. And, I mean, come on, Kraft knows it. That comment, I'm a little, like, I feel so privileged that we had Bill here. I mean, that's code word for, yeah, man, Bill's getting crapped on more than any coach we've ever seen in the history of the sport, let alone he's the greatest coach in the history of any sport, and he's getting crapped on by everybody, and mainly by the people that are Patriot supporters or players. That's what's crazy. So, I mean, that whole thing there was like, Bill should be pissed. We're going to do everything to kiss Bill's butt to get him back here a little bit. I mean, yeah, I've never seen a coach, you know, take as many blows as Bill Belichick has at the end of his career like this.
Well, and look, he's not.
He made his bet a little bit. I know.
The way he conducted himself with the media, that very gruff exterior, he could have balanced it out in a way. Nick Saban, his good friend, Nick Saban knows how to preserve all the secrets and strategies and still be affable and semi-charming when you need to be, because people are watching. And those people who've been watching all over the years, those are now the fan bases out there that are thinking about who do we want to coach the team. And when we did that poll during the season, when it was clear that he was going to be gone in New England, if your favorite team is looking for a coach after this season, do you want Bill Belichick? More than 70% said no. Not good grades for the Patriots on the NFLPA survey. And look, there's two ways you can go with it.
Yeah.
You can take it to heart, or you can say, it's flawed. It's unreliable. What questions? You know, you've got some owners who are trying to poo-poo it, and then you've got owners who are taking it seriously. And Robert Kraft says they will be taking it seriously. They will be trying to improve their marks. They had an F- on there for treatment of families. That's not good. An F for the weight room. That's not good. So you can either change, or you can try to downplay and demean those who have given you this very valuable feedback. And the smart organizations are going to do what they have to do to turn those F's into A's or something closer to A than F.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, this is, you know, again, winning, when they were winning, the weight room wasn't an F-, I don't think. You know, that's the funny thing, right? You know, and hey, there's two ways you can look at it. One, you want to go, come on, Patriots, right? Right, like, step it up a little bit. You've dominated the NFL for 20 years. All the playoff money, everything like that. Come on. You know, but there is a part of me too, and the Patriots are like this. One, they're one of the few teams that has their facility attached to the stadium, right? It's old school. It's the way, like, I grew up with my dad and the Giants. And I think, again, that's a little bit of them too. You know, their fabric, the Patriots, and what they are in the Kraft era is a lot rooted into that Giants fabric. Bill Parcells came over with Robert Kraft, right? He wasn't about like, oh, I want, you know, everything to be warm and cozy, and I want the greatest restaurant cafeteria ever, and hey, we're going to have a family area here with kid care and all that, right? Now, I know we got to adjust to the times, but old school teams, like back in the day, are you kidding me? My dad was afraid to bring me to a Saturday walkthrough. He put me in row 45 just to hide from Bill Parcells in the stadium, right? So it's they run it like a business, but they got to evolve a little bit, like we know, and it can't be so maybe cutthroat and just all about football all the time.
You're going to have players who can't wait to leave,
yep.
And you're going to have free agents that aren't going to want to come play for you.
Right.
And hey, we favor the players being treated better. I like this NFLPA report card. It holds people who are otherwise not accountable, directly accountable with grades that force them to open their eyes and make changes, even if that means opening the wallet as well and spending money they'd otherwise not spend on making things better. Let's take a break. When we return, because the kick return is now a thing again in the NFL, we're going to take a trip down memory lane and have a draft of our all-time favorite kick returners. We'll do that next here on PFT Live. There is Devin Hester's Super Bowl 41. Tony Dungy had decided in advance of the game, we are not going to kick to Devin Hester the night before. He said, we can't live in our fears, or words to that effect. And they kicked it to Devin Hester to start the game, and off went Hester. And that was the highlight for the Chicago Bears that day. The Colts would recover from that and win Super Bowl 41. But now the potential for that is back and better than ever, because everybody's going to be clustered together in the receiving team's end of the field.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, again, but this is why we want to see it. And see those type of plays. See the fastest of the fastest in the NFL open up and see what they can do in those special situations, right? I mean, that's a play that is etched in all of our brains forever. I mean, it really is. The story of Tony Dungy and, hey, screw him, we're going to kick the ball to him. Oh, don't you ever kick it to him again. That's great stuff, and that's why I'm glad they made the change here.
So let's do the Devin Hester Memorial Draft. Even though Devin Hester is still with us, he enters the Hall of Fame this year. He will be excluded from this collection of potential draft picks. Our all-time favorite kick returners, Chris, you are up.
Well, I'm a prisoner to Deion Sanders, right? Nobody excited me more ever in my life seeing somebody back deep to return a kick or a punt than Deion Sanders, prime time. I mean, you know, whether it's watching him at Florida State and doing it and going, who is this cool dude wearing number two flying around, or watching him at the Atlanta Falcons and picking up the punt, right? His first punt return ever. He picks it up. He dropped it on the ground, picks it up, turns the corner, does that. I was at a game. Here it is. Ready to go, guys. I mean, here it is. I mean, this is the moment. I mean, first off, look at those big shoulder pads. Look at the strength to break the arm tackles. But, oh, my gosh, the speed when he could turn it on. I mean, he's prime time. He's the man. And I got a chance to witness him do it in person once. I was at that game, Cowboys-Giants, when he had the punt return and the interception return in the same game. Pretty cool night. Prime time, my first pick.
High-stepping while a guy still thought he had a chance to get him.
That's
that
when you know you're fast.
Something.
Right.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And here he is.
I was here for this one. This is at 96, I believe. Yeah. This might have been 96, Monday Night Football game. If I remember correctly, our own Jason Garrett was starting at quarterback. Troy Aikman was hurt, right? I was still bitter at the Giants for cutting my dad in his 15th year after he had just gone to the Pro Bowl. So I was wearing a Cowboys jersey that night, I think 21. And I was rooting for the Cowboys. It was the only time ever I was at a Giants game where I didn't root for the Giants. But I was, you know, 16 and still mad a little bit. So sorry.
The skill that he had, we saw it in both of the punt returns.
He caught a pass in that game.
Giving up ground.
Right.
Giving up ground.
Right.
And having the speed to get to the opening. That is special, and that is rare speed, and he possessed it. I'll go with the human joystick from what? Almost 20 years ago now, Dante Hall, the guy that burned very brightly in the NFL, and it's easy to forget about him. He's not a Hall of Famer, but he was incredible. The stuff he could do back there. Look at that. Just bob and weave, and they're missing, and off he goes. He had that short area quickness, and then when he had the opening, he turned on the Jets and went down the field. He was the best returner of his day. By far, Dante Hall of the Chiefs.
Yeah, he was definitely rare, right? I mean, when he got in the league, wow. I mean, we hadn't seen a guy that could break ankles like that. I mean, it was Barry Sanders-ish as far as that was concerned, right? So that was really cool. And, yeah, he was the human joystick, like you said. Incredible highlights. All right, I'm going to go with the guy that is widely regarded, right? I'm going to give him his respect as the greatest returner of all time, and that's Brian Mitchell, right? We saw him at the Super Bowl. He got in our podcast a little bit. But, I mean, Brian Mitchell, 14 seasons, right? He holds about every record there is as far as return. Most kickoff return yards, most punt return yards, most combined kick return, most combined kick return yards in a game, kick returns in a game, right? He's got it all, is what I'm saying. Most kick return for touchdowns, 13, and did it everywhere and did it consistently, kick return and punt return. He was one of those guys that, yeah, he changed that third phase of the game when you were playing Washington, you know, back in the day.
I would be remiss if I did not pick Cordell Patterson, who was and is primarily, if not exclusively, a kick returner. Very limited punt returns. And since this is about the kickoff return, and he signed yesterday with the Steelers, and he has the all-time record with 9 kick returns for a touchdown under the old format, and he has a chance to add more to it now. Cordell Patterson, now with the Steelers, very well-traveled. First-round pick of the Vikings back in 2013 out of Tennessee, bouncing around and landing in Pittsburgh, and he's still got some juice in the tank, and he's already done enough to set him apart from the rest. Let's take a break. We'll do round 3 when PFT Live concludes right after this. All right, there are our picks so far. Deion Sanders, Dante Hall, Brian Mitchell, Cordell Patterson. The Devin Hester Memorial Draft, even though he's still with us. Favorite returner of all time. Chris, who do you have for your third round pick?
I'm going with Eric Metcalf, right? The old number 21 from the Cleveland Browns back in the day. Went to Texas, wore number 2 there, like myself, right? So I'm a little biased there. But, I mean, Eric Metcalf, I feel like when I was growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, he was the marquee punt returner playmaker in the sport a little bit. He was one of the first guys I felt like, wait, he plays running back and does some of that, but it feels like his main job is kick returner, punt returner, right? So he was a special weapon, that guy. Third down back, running back, catch the ball, returns. He was awesome.
I'm tempted to say Desmond Howard because he was a Super Bowl MVP and had a 99-yard kick return for a touchdown in that Super Bowl the Packers won over the Patriots. But I'm going to go all the way back to the 70s. The first return specialist I was ever aware of, and that was Billy White Shoes Johnson. The guy who had the end zone celebration.
One of the coolest ever.
He would do the leg wobble. He would do a split. He would do a spike. He was incredible, and he was feared. I think more of a punt returner than a kick returner, but that's all right. The key word is return. And Billy White Shoes Johnson, that was like, I just remember that amazement of seeing what he could do with the football and just break free from everyone else. Back at a time when there weren't a lot of exciting plays in NFL games, it was a lot of grinded out clouds of dust.
Yeah, no, I mean, big play guy. Cool look, cool nickname, cool end zone dances, like you said. That helps out, the aura as well. But good job. I like it. My returners were better, but
now,
better luck to you next time.
The kick return is back.
See ya.
Shut up. Goodbye.